We're ready.
Okay.
Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Oceana Community Services District Board of Directors. This is Wednesday, October 8th, 2025. So we'll start with roll call, please.
Director Joyce Sennison, absent. Director Villa?
Here.
Director Austin?
Here.
Vice President Rose, absent. And President Gibson?
Here.
Okay, let's stand for the flag salute. Hand over heart, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, do either of you want to change anything on the agenda? Or agenda review? Move anything or? Nope. Linda?
What?
Do you want to change anything on the agenda?
No.
Okay. Okay, so right now we'll take public comment for items that are not on the agenda.
Good evening, Charles Varney, and I'd like to thank the district and Mr. Schultz for putting together the legal opinion about the $35,000 discount to Mr. Grunfor. I think that clearly the district was in its rights to do that. I think it was also within its rights to charge him the $35,000, and that it was a very bad decision on the part of the board of directors to do that. It's a bad role model. I'd like to, and I also believe that there was a conflict of interest on the part of Director Austin to be participating in that process, I imagine, from the very beginning. I'd like to make a comment about the great opportunity that the Coastal Commission has given us to, through the sanitation district, to begin the planning for a full, to build a new sanitation treatment plant, and in the process, create a recycling water facility that would recycle all municipal water in South County, in the Five Cities area, especially from Arroyo Grande, Oceano, and Grover Beach, to drinking water standards, which would, by and large, create a sustainable and long-term guarantee of water availability in our area. This would be a legacy project. It would serve our great-great-grandchildren. And all we have to do, the Coastal Commission has put together a blueprint for this to happen in our area. And the existing treatment plant is old, it's vulnerable. The studies that have been done estimate it would need more than $100 million over the next 22 years in maintenance and repairs. Its replacement is inevitable, and now is the time for our communities to come together in this effort to protect our water resources of the future. At this time, there are billions of dollars in planning and construction grants from state and federal resources. Now is the time to embrace and mobilize as communities working together to create a modern water recycling facility and be a model for doing it right. We need elected leaders who have the vision and understanding necessary to seize this opportunity and push the process forward on behalf of all of us who live in Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Oceano. We need citizens who are educated and engaged in the process. We need to be ready and at the front of the line when it is time to seek funding. And I hope you all will help provide that leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment. Are there any other members of the public? Okay, all right. So seeing none, we'll close public comment and do our staff reports. And first is Commander McDaniel with Sheriff's South County.
Good evening, John McDaniel. I'm the commander at the Sheriff's South Station. So for Oceano, our statistics for last month were up a little bit, about 10% calls for service. So we had 367 calls for service this year, 339 last year at this time. Not a bad month. We had two battery calls, one of which was domestic violence, 27 disturbance calls, no burglary calls, one petty theft, one grand theft. Usually the denomination is $950, depending on if it pushes it to grand or it drops to petty theft. So that's the cutoff for that. Three vandalisms, thankfully no mail theft. A bunch of different assists to outside agencies, approximately 45 of those, nine suspicious subject calls, and 43 traffic enforcement stops, and 15 arrests for the Oceano area. So again, Oceano is a smaller community compared to like Napomo. So a lot of our work is in Napomo because we cover everything basically from south of Shell Beach all the way to Santa Maria out of this office. So
yeah,
okay. If I'm available for any questions, if anybody has any.
Okay, any comments or questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you,
Commander. And I don't see Chief Hallett. So we'll have Tony Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility Systems Manager. So Lopez is currently at 82% full, which is 40,553 acre feet. We've had zero sewer system overflows in the month of September. We got delivered just over 31 acre feet of Lopez water and 20 acre feet of state water and pumped just over 5 acre feet last month. We are still continuing to do our daily and monthly rounds, weekly and monthly samples. We had 17 work orders, 27 USAs. The reason the USAs are a lot higher than normal is there's a company over here boring infrastructure for fiber optics. So you're gonna see them around Oceano. You've seen them probably the last few months and they're continuing to do that work. We had 13 customer calls. We had 10 after hours call outs, which is a little more than usual. One of the call outs was at 340 Juanita for low water pressure. And if you don't know, if your water softener is not serviced, it will stop the water getting into your house, and there's a bypass on there if you're not servicing your water softeners. We had 4 after hours call outs for turn ons. That was after door hangers went out. We had a courtyard PSI issue. We had low system pressure, but the PSI gauge that's on the alarm function actually broke. It's liquid filled, and when it broke, it actually went down to zero, which triggered a false pressure system, zero pressure system loss. Since then, we did replace the gauge. We've had 4 after hours call outs for the lift station. The lift station, the volute and impellers are getting clogged, and also the check valves are failing, which is allowing the water to come back into the volute and impeller. And when that happens, it can actually cause air in there, and it causes the motor to cavitate and to lose suction. We do have brand new check valves that we'll be installing hopefully next week when we have some time. So that'll eliminate the problem. We also did clean out the wet well at the lift station to prevent some of that debris from getting in there and clogging the impeller. We had quite a few door hangers because the CIP is still going on. Quite a few door hangers for the CIP project multiple times, valve turning for the CIP to get ready for shutdowns. Quite a few pressure testing as the mains go in. We also, quite a few back tees on the mains when they do go in before they do go into service. And quite a few shutdowns for the CIP project, which does all take time. We had a fire flow testing for fire suppression, door hangers for late payments. We had an angle stop replaced on Elm Street by a contractor. We were doing sewer lateral hotspots. One of the sewer laterals on the 1700 block of beach was replaced that we've been maintaining for quite some time by a contractor. So we will no longer need to maintain that. And we are down to 6 laterals throughout Oceana that we maintain monthly. We had lock-offs, the natural gas Waukesha. We're trying to get it repaired. It does leak when it's running, but trying to figure out exactly what the issue is, but it is still up and running. It does leak a little water. Still picking up trash. We had a location out there on Vista Street, the 2100 block. Quite a bit of debris out there. We called out, picked that up. Meter reads. Completed meter reads. Once the meter reads were complete, we had rereads. Leak notification, comment codes from the meter reading. They're all complete. And we completed the Five Cities Fire Authority ISO portion on behalf of the district. And ISO is an insurance service office. And which 40% of that rating is based upon the water system itself that incorporates into the insurance for fire protection for the homes. First of the month equipment startups, and we started our sewer jetting for our SSMP. Any questions?
Does the water get, a number, or, how do they determine?
So once they, my understanding, they do this every 5 years. About 5 years ago when I last did it, all the agencies that are part of Five Cities Fire Authority, they give them all this data, and then they come back with a rating from 1 to 10, 1 being the best, 10 being the worst. So I'm sure it's still all getting compiled, and you should be able to get that information once it's all complete.
Okay. And what's the status of our employees? Because we created a new position, correct?
Correct. We have two new employees, yes.
Okay. Okay.
When were they hired?
Say again?
The two new ones? Two new employees, you said?
Yes.
When were they hired?
When were they hired? I would say just over 2 months ago. Carrie probably has the exact date, but it's roughly just over 2 months ago.
And what's their job title?
Utility system operators, they were hired July 21st.
One of them is a utility system operator 1, and one of them is a utility system operator 3, because he already has his D2, T2, and a Class A. And the one that's utility system operator 1, he has a Class A, and he's bilingual.
And to that question, I would like for Dean and Chris to come to the board meeting next month. They were unavailable tonight, but would love to introduce them to the board.
That's a good idea,
Sounds good. We'll have them here.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. And now our general manager, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, President Gibson, members of the board. It's been a busy couple of months. We last met on August 13th. And so some of the primary activities that I've been up to that I'd like to let the board know, I've been participating in a working group advising the County Public Works Department on their desalination feasibility study. I think they've held one public meeting, and they presented at the RAC, which Director Villa and I both attended on October 1st. But the county got a grant to kind of do a high-level assessment of desalination in the county, and they're proceeding with determining whether or not that's cost-effective for our county, given the other water resources we have. I've also been continuing to advocate for OCSD's position in terms of the Lopez ongoing ESA, Environmental Species Act litigation. I would like to report that the county met a major milestone in submitting their habitat conservation plan. The draft was submitted to the federal agencies and the state agencies on October 1st. And so that'll undergo review and will be revised over the next few months. I also continue to work with the state water subcontractors on improving our position in terms of excess state water. And today at the Board of Supervisors, as a matter of fact, there was a water transfer item that I emailed the board about. There's a potential to sell about $1.9 million worth of excess state water that's currently being stored at San Luis Reservoir. And last fiscal year, I think we had a windfall of around $140,000 that we got in state water credit for future purchases. And so we hope that this year we'll be in another good position to save the ratepayers' costs of future state water purchases. Mr. Maricino mentioned the CIP project. It's about 75% complete. There are 5 new water lines being installed, and the project has gone pretty well. We'll talk about that a little later, one of our items. The two new utility staff have been mentioned, and I would like to give kudos to the utility staff. They have really stepped up over the last couple of months. We've missed Mr. Maricino's expertise deeply, but at the same time, the existing staff has been pushed forward and excelled and learned a lot on their own over the last month or two. So kudos to them. Today, there was a Zone 3 TAC meeting that I attended, and again, having Mr. Maricino back has been very helpful. He noted that the reporting from Zone 3 on our usage of Lopez and maybe even state water isn't tracking with our accounting, and so Mr. Maricino will be in touch with them to make sure that that's corrected. There was an August 27th CIP committee meeting. It was the second meeting. Director Austin attended that meeting along with all of our committee members. I think Mr. Langford is in the audience. He's on the committee. But I just wanted to report to the board that that committee is doing fine work. They're asking great questions. They're challenging staff. And one of the big topics that we talked about on August 27th, the board were here tonight. It's on our sewer master plan. And capital improvement plan, and MKN is here to present on that in short order. There was no OPARC meeting yesterday. The quorum wasn't met. However, the OPARC meeting for December 2nd is scheduled on the books, and so we'll reconvene OPARC on that day. And the last thing I wanted to advise the board is we are planning, similar to what we did last year, an office closure over the Christmas, New Year holiday. Mm-hmm. We did a great job of advising our customers of the closure. We didn't really have any issues. Everyone kind of understood we were going to close the doors for a week and a half. And I think Ms. Cassiola and her office team have done a great job of kind of moving dates around so that if we do billing or door hangers or shutoffs, we don't have it happen in such a way that impacts the customer. So we're shifting those things around to be friendly to the constituency. But right now that closure is planned for December 24th through January 2nd. So that is what our current plan is, and I'm happy to take any questions from the board.
I have one question. Are we close to the end of our to-do list on water lines?
I wish that were true. Mm-hmm. The water lines that are being improved right now are 1-4 through 1-10. So they're our highest priority lines. We do have a set of other lines that are in category 1. And then we have category 2 and category 3, and we have a total of about 30 water lines to be replaced. Mm-hmm. So I'd say we're more at the front end of getting those replaced, but we do have a good system in place. We've updated our preliminary engineering study, and we're completing NEPA. In fact, Ms. Cassioli and I had a call today with our consultants, our NEPA consultants, so that we can clear both CEQA, which we've already done. The board's adopted a mitigated negative declaration on the California Environmental Quality Act, and we still need to get National Environmental Policy Act clearance so that we can access federal funds for that. Yeah. So it's ongoing, but no, we're not done.
Yeah, and even when we finish, we need to start over.
Start right? over again, yeah.
Yeah, right, of course. Any more questions, comments?
No.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Brown. Okay, now we'll move to our outside committee reports. So I have a real short, few short comments on Zone 3 on September 18th. And we had no business items, so it was a real quick meeting. But the one interesting thing was they talked about how Lopez, that they bring these trained dogs in to sniff all the boats, and those dogs can find the invasive mussels. So they really save a lot of time for staff.
So, oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Who knew? Okay. Okay, Director Austin?
I don't have anything to report.
And Director Villa?
Yes. On September 25th, I attended, it's not really a meeting, but it's a historic event, which was the completion of our track here at the Oceano Elementary. So I want to publicly thank everybody that donated and thank everybody that volunteered their time to make this project come to reality. It's very nice. I haven't walked on it yet, but Well, I went and looked at it and sort of walked on it, but it was a very nice event. They had at least, I would say, 20 kids, and they all ran around the track. They tried to run around the track anyways at least twice. They also had some ice cream, and we had former director Varney there at the event. Also, Jimmy Pauling attended. It was nice to have him there. And the principal of Oceano School, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name. They were all there in attendance. Also representatives from the people, the landscape, Hacienda Landscape, I remember the name, Hacienda Landscape, were there. And it was just a, you know, nice ribbon cutting event, and something that we didn't think, at least I was like, for some time wasn't sure if it was gonna, you know, come to reality or not, so. Thank you for everyone for making that a reality. On October 1st, I attended the RAC meeting along with our manager here, and as he said, it was just an update on the county's DCEL plan. DCEL standing for those that don't know, maybe desalination. we now are down to like 5 alternative sites from the original 16, and these sites are located both in North and South County. And I'll try to list them all here, so hopefully I got them all right. Morro Bay, Avila South, Slow Water Treatment Plant, Morro Strand also. The county needs to make sure that these sites meet all the geology and environmental constraints, and that's why it's taking so long, because it's got to, you know, make sure that it's not an environmental, it's environmentally and biologically responsible, because there's areas that if there's an endangered species or whatever shouldn't be touched. So that takes some time to figure all that out, and that's why it's taking us taking so long. And the representative there, I want to apologize for not writing down her name, but she did state and emphasize that this is just a feasibility study, and it's not something that's permanent, you know, that's for sure we're going to have in the county. We're just looking into the best areas to have a desalination plant and to see if it's feasible to have one for right now. And in the near future, she said they would have more community engagement.
And did they say where in the South County?
At the Slow Water Treatment Plant. Yeah.
Okay. The if I may add a little bit to what Director Villa said, President Gibson, one of the reasons why they're looking at a desal, potential desal facility in what I would say is the distant future, 20, 30 years from now, at near the current sanitary district treatment plant is because of the benefits of co-locating the outfall. So typically with desal, you have to get rid of brine and effluent and having an outfall that's already existing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Part of their feasibility study looks at using existing pipes and outfalls if they can. And then I also failed to mention, thank you for triggering my memory, Director Villa, I also attended the ribbon cutting for the track. I was invited by Lucia Marr to say a few words. And in summary, my words were a lot of praise for OPARC and all the work they put in order to make that that track happen, because it was a lot of work and a lot of fundraising and a lot of community effort. And Lucia Marr really delivered along with the support of OCSD.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? And for the track, we need to give credit to Charles Varney for starting the idea and pushing it through and came to completion. So that's a feather in everybody's cap and OPARC. Okay. Okay, I'll close meetings and we'll take public comment on our committees and reports.
A quick comment on the desalinization concept. The state rules are that you have to exhaust all other means of getting alternative water before you go to desal because it's the most expensive. So desal's at the bottom of the list. I doubt that in 10 or 15 years there's any way that any desal plant will be approved for location by the sewage treatment plant. In fact, the sewage treatment plant, I don't think it's going to be approved to be there anymore because of climate change induced sea level rise and flooding, and for the reasons I presented earlier. As a director, I learned to appreciate our staff tremendously, both the office staff, the administrative staff, and our utility staff. I noticed that, and I'm glad to hear that there's some, I don't know if those are new positions or they were filling in, or they were replacement positions, but I also noticed that, I don't know, what last budget or last month, there was $50,000 or so to our Burke, who I think we hire frequently to do jobs. And so my sense is that there's a lane that our team is competent and comfortable working in. And then there's other jobs where we need bigger equipment or whatever, and that's when an outside contractor is hired. I just wondered, Mr. Brown, if you could just give us as ratepayers just a sense of how that balance works in the office. Thank you.
Yeah, President Gibson, what I can say to that is the district has a long history of doing 90 to 100% of work in-house, and it's a testament to the skills and ability that our crew has. I do think that in the last 6 to 12 months, we have had an open position. We have had been shorthanded. We have had work pop up that needs to get done. Mr. Maricino is pretty transparent about what he and his crew can handle, and when they need to pull in outside resources, they do so. And so we'll continue to do that as needed. I think the preference is we do as much as we can in-house. In fact, one of the cases that we made to the board in adding one new position, we filled a vacant position and added a new position in the utilities team, was that some of those outside contracts are going to go down because mm-hmm. we're going to have more capacity to get things done in-house. And then to Mr. Varney's other point, at times there is a need for specialized equipment, traffic control on Highway 1 that is difficult for us to meet standards for. And so there'll be times when, we're going to call in outside contractors. But I will say, having been in the industry for the last 25 years, this district walks the line very well in terms of doing the best they can to save the ratepayers money and save costs on all the work they do.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Okay, are there any other public comments?
Yeah, Carrie Langford, longtime resident. Anyway, I too would like to just on talking about the track. I'd like to commend Mr. Varney and all the people there on O-Park that worked on that track. And I know we have had some differences. Mr. Varney and I are not the best of beer drinking buddies. But I know the hard work that was put in by him, the exceptionally hard work, and by the Morrisons and a few other people there and from the CMR to make that happy. And just speaking as a resident, I think he just did a fantastic job of getting the track through. And I just think you deserve a thank you for that hard work and for starting that project. And I also think on the water side that you're not off the hook. What are you going to start next? Because we, now that you've shown what you can do, and you're getting expected to keep this going, And so, anyway, in all honesty, I think it really is a great thing, and hopefully it will be used to better involve the community in coming together and community events. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And anyone else? Okay, so looks like we'll close public comment and move on to the consent agenda. Let's see if you want to take a few couple minutes to look at.
President Gibson,
uh-huh.
Just as a note, we have provided an amended 7A where we've corrected the section 8A to read. We have copies on the table as well. It's been redlined. Instead of Director Austin abstained, we have edited that to say Director Austin recused herself and for reasons of conflict of interest. So that has been included, and it's a handout on your table and on the table by the door. So when we get to 7A, if you could, if you agree to those.
So you corrected that, what this other thing was from.
Yeah, if you look on page
so,
two.
I guess to Ms. Caskill's point, if their pleasure is when they adopt the consent calendar to include the amended minutes, that would make everything clear. And then just, I think the purpose or the reason for Director Austin's recusal was not a stated conflict of interest, but as to avoid any perceived conflict of interest
by certain people.
So, but the minutes.
It's not a conflict.
Yeah, the minutes reflect that, and so thank you for that, making that happen.
So should we take public comment first? Or?
Sure. Yeah.
I'll take public comment.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll open public comment for the items that are on the consent agenda. Okay, seeing none, I'll bring that back to the board. Close public comment. And do you have any comments?
I just want to make a comment that I'm really happy to see the One Cool Earth going through again. And are they going to give a presentation tonight?
We asked for a summary slide from them, so that's included in the packet. Given the presentation they gave last year, it was going to be similar this year. The program continues. They're doing similar work, so we forewent the presentation tonight.
Okay, so I'm really happy to see that coming through again.
Yeah.
They do a great job over there.
Yep.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so if there's no further comment, does anyone want to make a motion?
I'll move that we approve the consent agenda with the amended minutes on item 7A to reflect what reflects the
correction.
The corrections on.
I second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Can we have a roll call?
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And President Gibson?
Yes. Okay, the motion passes. Okay, so we'll start with our business items. And first we have the review and adopt the district's 2025 sanitary sewer capital improvement plan.
Yeah, President Gibson, I'll kick us off here, and we have Eileen Shields and J.J. Reichmuth from MKN, who are going to carry the bulk of the presentation. But I will say that one of the first things that struck me last year was the need for a sewer capital improvement program. The staff has done an amazing job over the last 10 and 15 years of maintaining the system, but we really haven't done and prioritize significant capital investments in the sewer system, and we can do that now based on the plan that you're about to hear about. We did have MKN come to our Oceano Capital Improvement Program Committee meeting on August 27th, and they gave a similar presentation to the one you're going to see tonight. We did receive several salient comments and questions from the Capital Improvement Committee, and those have been incorporated into the document and the presentation that you're about to see. And so without any more introductory remarks, so I think Eileen Shields is gonna come forward and walk us through a presentation that should capture what I think is a state-of-the-art sewer capital improvement program that we're asking you to adopt tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. If AGP would put the presentation up, that would be helpful. Good evening, I'm Eileen Shields. I'm a principal engineer with MKN. And for those of you who might not be familiar with MKN, we were founded in 2012 here on the Central Coast, and we're now over 80 people across 8 offices in Central and Southern California. We're focused solely on water, wastewater, and recycled water, primarily for municipalities. I'm very happy to be here this evening to present the draft engineering report for the district's sanitary sewer capital improvements plan. I served as the principal in charge for the project, so that means I oversee the staffing and the quality control. I provide support where needed, and every once in a while they let me out of the office to do some presentations like this one. I also have JJ Reichmuth here with me today, who's the project manager, and he can help answer questions if we get into the details. So next slide. The district's last, can we do the next slide? The district's last sewer study was completed over 15 years ago in 2009. So this project was really needed to help identify, organize, prioritize deficiencies in the district's sewer system, provide cost estimates, and also to inform the rate study. Our scope of work included workshops with district staff to collect information, review progress. We performed some field investigations, including CCTV or television inspection of the sewer pipelines, manhole inspections, and condition assessment of the district's lift station. The scope included development of recommended projects and prioritization, and a recommended 10-year CIP, or capital improvements plan. One of our early deliverables was a summary of the wastewater CIP projects and costs. So that was delivered early in May to support the district's sewer rate study. Part of the scope of work also included a review of available grants and low interest funding sources and a preliminary funding plan. And then finally, it wrapped up with this engineering report, which is presented to you today. And it provides the information needed to plan and complete projects and provide ongoing safe and reliable sewer service. Next slide. MKN worked collaboratively with district staff throughout the project. We held an initial workshop with district staff to identify the main problem areas to focus the investigations. We also performed field investigations with substantial support from district staff, including the CCTV inspection of the pipelines, the manhole inspections, and the lift station condition assessment. After these investigations, MKN reviewed the information and developed a risk analysis, and then we met with district staff again to go over those findings and discuss project priorities and approach. Next slide. So on the field inspections, we'd say overall the district sewer system is in relatively good shape considering its age. District staff worked hard and diligently to clean out the sewer lines ahead of the CCTV inspection. Some of those lines had to be re-cleaned due to the quantity of grit and sand and the limitations of their existing equipment. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. Video inspections were performed over 2 separate trips, one in December and one in February. In total, the team spent about 7 days on nearly 11,000 linear feet of pipeline for the video inspections. So just to give an idea, that represents only about 12% of the district's system. Next slide. MKN developed a risk analysis approach to help prioritize the projects based on the defects observed in the field. So the purpose was really just to develop a tool used to rank these projects. Generally, the approach develops scores for the likelihood of failure based on severity of the defect and the consequence of the failure. So how bad would it be if there was a failure in this particular situation? And then those scores were combined to provide an overall risk score. Next. The risk scoring incorporates, like I mentioned on the last slide, the likelihood of the failure, which comes from field information. And then the consequence of failure for pipelines were ranked based on five parameters. Street access, environmental location, so are there adjacent water bodies or other vulnerable locations. The diameter of the pipeline, the material of the pipeline, and of course the pipe age. Next slide. For the manholes, the risks were based on access and environmental location again, same as pipelines. But based on the condition assessments, we also looked at structural condition. We talked with staff about the frequency of the operation and maintenance that's performed at that particular location. We looked at the number of pipes connecting to that manhole and the size of those connections. Next. So combining the projects identified from the inspections with the risk ranking and district staff input, MKN developed a priority list of the projects. The list was split into three categories. So priority A for near term, within the next 5 years. Priority B for projects between the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. And priority C would be the longer term projects we would see occurring after 10 years. Next slide. Comprehensive project costs were developed, including estimated construction costs and soft costs. Those soft costs consist of things like engineering design, construction management, administration, and project contingencies. And all of these were put together to develop the 10-year CIP. So that CIP totals $7.14 million, with priority A projects estimated at about $1.8 million, priority B around $4 million, and priority C approximately $1.3 million. And I'll just note that these are all in 2025 dollars. Next slide. So we included the priority A projects in this presentation because they're deemed high priority, near term. The full CIP is included in the report, and if your board has questions on any of them, we're happy to address. For priority A, staff ranked obtaining a new maintenance equipment as one of the highest priority projects. A new, larger jetting truck would allow for much better cleaning, reducing staff time on cleaning activities, and greatly reducing the risk for overflows. Several areas, as mentioned earlier, were identified as having sedimentation buildup, and better cleaning equipment would help mitigate this. Project A1 was included in the CIP at $660,000. Next slide. We do the next slide. Thank you. Project A2 is the Pier Avenue lift station interim improvements. The district's only sewage lift station is located on the edge of Pier Avenue at this multi-leg intersection with Lakeside Avenue and Air Park Drive. It's in a high-risk FEMA flood zone area. It experiences high volumes of debris and rags. The pumps that are there can't keep up with peak flows with any redundancy in place. And all the controls are in a dry well, meaning everything's below grade, and it's a confined space entry every time they need to work on the controls. The lift station requires a lot of staff time, often during emergency situations. Improvements there are high priority. Ultimately, a new lift station located off the street is desired by the district. However, this is gonna take time to plan, design, and construct. Interim improvements are recommended to reduce the risk while the larger project is developed. Project A2 includes new larger pumps, relocation of the controls out of the dry well, some coating and maintenance that's needed and recommended, floodproofing the access hatch, and the purchase of a backup generator for the lift station. Next slide. Project A3 is sewer rehabilitation on Bellridge Street. District staff had reported experiencing regular sewage backups on Bellridge, and the CCTV inspections supported this because the pipeline does indeed have a significant sag. Sags is like a dip or settling within the sewer pipeline, and they can result in the accumulation of debris that ultimately ends up blocking the pipeline. So Project A3 would replace this section to remove the sag. Next slide. Project A4 is sewer rehab on Wilmar Avenue. CCTV inspections identified an obstruction in the pipe on Wilmar. You can kind of see it in the photo capture of that CCTV video. There's a white piece kind of in the center of the pipeline there. It appears to be a piece of PVC coating, perhaps, or pipe. There was also a clogged lateral, likely root intrusion, identified nearby. So these are two smaller projects, but they're prioritized due to the high likelihood of failure and combined together as Project A4. Next slide. This is another table going through priority A projects A5 through A7. I have a separate slide for Project A5, but very briefly, I'll talk about A6 and A7. A6 consists of continuing the CCTV video inspections on the remaining system until all the segments have been inspected. This effort could happen every 2 to 3 years. We've included $63,000 for Project A6, or the CCTV inspections. A7 is a project to replace 6 district-owned sewer laterals that are in need of replacement to mitigate possible backups. Next slide. Project A5 is the North Highway 1 crossing. This project consists of rehabbing an 8-inch sewer pipeline that crosses Highway 1, making access very difficult. The CCTV showed the pipeline contains horizontal joint deflections, or what we term offset joints. You can kind of see it in the video there, where you can see kind of a different colored ring in somewhat the center of the photo, and that's indicating, you can tell as the CCTV camera goes over it, it'll bump. There's a bit of an offset there. These offset joints can eventually lead to a failure because the pipeline is physically starting to come apart there. The severity of the defect is not particularly high in this case, but due to the location and the consequence if a failure happened, elevated this project to a priority A. So using that risk analysis tool was helpful in this case. Next slide. MKN worked with Rincon Consultants. They were a sub-consultant on this project to research funding opportunities. So after reviewing some of the programs that could apply to the district sewer projects, Rincon recommended preparing and submitting a fiscal year 26 appropriations request to U.S. Congressman Saluda Carbajal's office for project A through A5.
Not only did they recommend, but we actually submitted that request. So
yes.
That went in.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to note it was completed in April. Applications to both USDA funding programs for a bundled suite of projects A2 and A5 through A7, plus A1 for communities, facilities, direct loan, and grant program. And coordination with the County of SLO to determine if OCSD can access a portion of the county's Community Development Block Grant Program funding, or CDBG, for some of these sewer projects. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions or comments and attempt to answer them.
Yeah, what was the grant you were talking about?
Oh, so Salud Carbajal's office had a call for projects with a deadline that was lining up right about the time we were finishing this assessment. And so worked with JJ and his team and some folks at Rincon, and we put together an application. and we submitted it, and we included some of the draft CIP documents that identified that. We haven't heard back, but I just wanted the board to know that we've been as proactive as possible in seeking those outside funds as the board has directed us.
Do you have any other questions?
No.
I had a couple. What causes a sag in the line, like at Bell Ridge you talked about?
So I can comment on a couple and then invite JJ if he has additional notes, but it's usually due to uneven settling in the pipe trench underneath the pipe.
Okay.
Say if there's an earthquake or something.
That could cause a sag, yeah.
Okay. And is there any more potential for grant opportunities?
I'd say there's almost always potential for grant opportunities. We're working with, we've provided a preliminary funding memo, and that was included. There's a couple of low-cost funding programs through USDA that we'd recommend applying for.
Okay. And the lift station, you said that was a really big project, so what's a timeline on that?
For the priority A?
Yeah.
We'd recommend getting starting on that as soon as you can. I don't know if Mr. Brown has a schedule in mind for that.
Yeah, so we'll spend the next 6 months really teasing out whether or not we can pursue some of the interim improvements that are recommended in the CIP, like the larger pumps, the flood proofing, bring in the dry well controls above ground. There's a lot of benefit in that, and there also is a lot of benefit in the long term. There's not, if you total up all of the interim improvements, I think it's in the $700,000 range, and then the entire relocation is about double that. And so we also have to ask the question, you know, do we want to go for the full improvement and the relocation? And if we can do that in a relatively quick time scale, then we wouldn't do too many interim improvements. So I need to work with utility staff and MKN to see which pathway, but that's the nice thing about having the CIP is we have everything laid out, and we can do some preliminary design for the interim improvements if we need to. And then also I wanted to point out, since President Gibson asked, beginning on page 125 of your packet, we included a 5 to 7 page detailed memo that helps staff go after which funding sources. So it's all in the memo, the programs are identified, and so we really have our marching orders to seek the grant funds. Okay.
Do you have a location for, are you gonna go in?
Yeah, we just kind of go inland is our ideal thought.
State Park?
Yeah, there's a couple of easements back there. There's property that could be accessed or easement granted. There's some options, but it wouldn't go too far away from its current location. Okay. But getting it out, of the county right-of-way would be a huge benefit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see them down there every day almost. It seems like there's something wrong with it. So that's important.
I have a question about the CCTV. Is there an accuracy on CCTV when you use it? I mean, I'm just wondering, like, when you see something on there, and then when you actually get in there, do you find something different, or is it pretty accurate?
I think it's pretty accurate, given, you know, the availability of information that you can see while you're in there.
Right, right.
And some of the complications come in if you can't fully clean a pipeline out, and the camera can't travel all of the way. It's not super fine detail. You know, we're not examining, you know, the coating or, you know, the wall. Yeah. Exactly. It's really just looking for those major defects or pipe separation or root intrusion. Mm-hmm. Or like you saw on that one capture was, there's a big chunk of PVC in there.
Yeah.
Lodged in the pipeline.
And then just out of curiosity, what's the difference between like working in adobe instead of sand, or is there, how different is it?
As far as pipe installation?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it's or different. Sedimentation?
For settling and such? JJ, you wanna take this one?
JJ Wright with MKN. As far as insulation, a pipe with different materials, it really depends on the detail that the contractor is using to install it. So typically when you install sewer pipe or any pipe, the pipe is surrounded by a better material if it's in clay. So it'll be around in sand, which then you wouldn't have that action of the clay, like a clay swelling or such when it gets wet and moving that pipe around. Yeah. CCTV, we're only seeing the inside of the pipe, so we don't know how the actual pipe was installed until we dig it up. Okay. But based on what we see, you know, there was some sags, which is pretty normal for that age of pipe. You can get some slow settlement, but you don't see pipe moving around, or a lot of times in that material where the material is going to expand and such, you'll see actually the pipe will start to fracture because it's getting loaded in different spots.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And the other thing to think about is when there's offsets or other pipe imperfections, if you're in a loam or clay or adobe environment, you get a little bit of mud or dirt that'll trickle in and typically move down through the pipe. This area is unique for me because I've never seen so much sand that can so easily enter a system. It's much more mobile and it gets into everything. So being in a sandy environment, there's a lot more, I would say, intrusion into the pipe system from the sand.
And that's probably coming from surface features like manholes, people's laterals. Mm-hmm. Most of the joints on the pipes look good. So it's probably not coming into the pipe, but from the top and down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because in Halcyon, you know, we have big areas of adobe and then right next to the sand. It's mm-hmm. strange how they kind of intermix. So, okay, I think that those are all my questions. Let me see if, let's open this for public comment if people have questions or comments.
With the CIP meeting that we had a month and a half ago or whatever it was, and I sit in on that committee, and my real interest to begin with, and if you recall, I started asking about the water jet truck, and there's the guy back there that's going to be in charge of this thing or would like it, and so I think it would just be really great if, for the moment, if Tony could come up and give a little bit of a presentation or talk about why he needs a $600,000 new truck and what the ramifications and this whole thing is, because for most of us, I'm sure we have no idea, number one, what it's going to be used for. Number two is why he needs such an expensive piece of equipment and what it could be used for. And I had that question when I was here. When you made that presentation first, and now there's the horse to, to ask about this, and if it's all right with you, I'd just like to him to tell us a little bit about what it's for and why he needs this new piece of equipment, how it would be used.
Absolutely. So we currently have a 2013 Pipe Hunter jetter trailer. Now that jetter trailer, when we purchase it, it requires a Class A operator to pull it. Nobody had a Class A, so we were already at a disadvantage. Now the Pipe Hunter has a 3/4 inch line that sewer jets. It also has a debris tank of 500 gallons, and then it only holds 400 gallons of water. And the age of it is 2013. We have gotten really good at fixing and repairing it. Now, jetter vector trucks like that do not require a Class A. Most of the times a Class B with the tanker endorsement. The debris tank is a lot larger and it does hold a lot more water, probably double. I'd have to do a little bit of research. I have operated them before, but the hose is also a 1-inch hose. It has the head that it has more gallons per minute that it can put out, and it can clean bigger pipes more efficiently. Just like she said, we had to actually jet. We have it's either a 10 or 12 inch main next to the airport. We had to jet that thing probably 5 to 6 times to actually get all the sediment out. So they could camera it, because the 1 or 2 times we jetted it, the camera could not make it because due to the sediment. And you really don't know how much sediment's in there until you send a camera in there. But we do utilize this piece of equipment yearly to be in compliance with our SSMP. And also when the debris tank, when we vacuum, it's only a 4-inch container to vacuum. Unlike a Vactor or vac truck, it's an 8-inch. So you can actually vacuum, excavate a lot quicker, and the cleaning on it is greater. There's just the volume of water that it can put out, and the pressure is you know, it does a better job more efficiently compared to a trailer. And just the mobility of a trailer and a truck, getting into some of these spots, we have buried the truck in some areas that we've had to have it towed out, to be honest with you.
I can imagine.
So that's the difference in a ballpark. Does that answer your question?
I'm just trying to educate a little bit more on what is the real advantage and necessity, how it will be.
Well, let me just add on to that. Mr. Langford, we would have to have you up at the mic in order for people to hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
So just to kind of wrap this up, if I could, you know, create an analogy on the spot. The analogy would be, let's say you have to move this room's volume of dirt, and your equipment is a shovel and a wheelbarrow. That's the equipment we have now, and we're upgrading to a backhoe and a dump truck. So if you think about how long it would take you to evacuate and haul the amount of dirt that could fill this room, we're basically going to modern equipment that enables us to do much more work in much less time. And quite frankly, I've never seen a district of this size with this much pipe be able to do the work it's doing with the size trailer, the volume nozzle that we have right now. So this is the number one project, and we've already begun to get some quotes and look at loans. We have a representative coming in a couple of weeks to show us one of these modern trucks in our yard, and we'll be evaluating options over the next couple months, and we'll look to execute the purchase soon.
Okay, thanks, Tony. You've convinced
Thank you.
Us.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, then we'll bring it back to the board. And oh, I'm sorry.
Two things. First of all, hearing about all the sand on Pier Avenue. Certainly, you know, the sand comes in up the ramp to the beach and down the street. A lot of it gets carried out off the beach on cars. And I would think that it would be appropriate to ask state parks to kick in some money, since their operations are impacting the operation of, you know, our sewage system. And we are paying those costs for the damage that they're doing. Secondly, I'd like to understand better, since there was no mention of any costs associated with the wastewater treatment plant in this analysis, and I understand it wasn't for that, but where in the rate structure do the improvements at the sanitation district come into this picture? I mean, this is being paid for out of our sewage rates. And what about the sanitation district improvements and their costs? How do those figure into this?
Okay, thank you. So we'll bring it back to the board. Are we taking any action, or?
I think you need to answer that.
Yeah, President Gibson, what I would say about that is, you know, there are two distinct systems. We have a conveyance system that we own, maintain, operate. That's really about delivering the untreated wastewater to the plant. The final point of delivery is the lift station. That's where it all goes, and that's where it all has to be lifted up and pushed over to the sanitary district. At the sanitary district, you know, obviously they're treating it and they're disposing of it, and so that's a separate rate. Their rates, I think, at the same time our rates changed, so did the sanitary districts. But I do think, to Mr. Varney's point, there is some cross-benefit. The more upgrades we do to our system, the better it is for the sanitary district, because we'll have less intrusion, we'll have less I&I, we'll have less problems in terms of what we convey and what gets down there. And the same thing on the other end. When they upgrade their equipment and it gets treated appropriately, then rates can stabilize. And so there's some cross benefit. But really, they're two distinct systems, and that's why we only analyze the infrastructure that we own and maintain. To your other question, we are looking for board adoption. The staff recommendation is to adopt this CIP, and that does put us in position when we get asked by the funding agencies, has your board adopted this plan? And when it has that endorsement, we typically score better when we go after grants. That's one of the several benefits to having a board adopted CIP plan.
Okay, the board has no further comments or anything.
I just want to say that the assertion that it's the vehicles driving up the street with the sand has nothing to do with the sand in the pipes. The whole beach is built on sand, and the air park where they were talking about the sand in there, it's because of the nature of the place, the location. It's all sand. The whole beach is sand. So there's no correlation between cars driving up the road and making those pipes full of sand. Thank you.
Does anyone want to make a motion?
I'll move that we approve the CIP.
Or adopt?
Adopt it as presented. And thank Elaine for the nice presentation.
A second.
Okay, a first and a second roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And President Gibson?
Yes. Okay, the motion
and
passes.
President Gibson, if I may, I don't want to let JJ and Tony and Doug go away from tonight without me saying thank you, because without the input from our utility staff and their expertise in identifying hotspots, it turned out that all of the work that we did verified some of what we already know. We were just able to document it better. And JJ, as a project manager, was a pleasure to work with. So thank you so much for all your hard work.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much to everyone.
And it was interesting, which is a plus.
Yeah, you did a great job with the slides.
Okay, now we'll go to business item B. Do you want to take that, Mr. Brown?
I will. I certainly will, President Gibson. I'm getting to that spot on my computer here. So item 8B is consideration and approval of agreement between OCSD and the County of San Luis Obispo to accept and implement $93,000 in public education government funds for audio visual improvements to the district board chambers. And Mr. Schultz is available. It might be nice to have him give a little bit of color to this, but I'll start off by saying that this was something that Ms. Cassiola and Mr. Schultz really took on. These PEG funds, as we call them, the public education government funds, come available to entities like ours in order to improve public access to government activities. And a lot of the specifications are deemed in the Federal Communications Act. And Mr. Schultz is much more familiar with that than I am. But the good news here is that through persistence and activity from, I think, Mr. Schultz and Ms. Cassiola, we have been awarded the $93,000, and we plan to use that really to upgrade the room that we're in so that we have computers and we have the ability to have staff, consultants, legal, zoom in, make presentations normally. We'll have new cameras that can rotate and really look at whoever's speaking. I think it'll be less of a burden on AGP as it is today. And really, we'll be modernizing our boardroom, similar to those. I know many of you are on other committees and other boards, and you go to Pismo Beach and Grover and AG, and you see more modern audiovisual equipment. And we have gotten a quote, and we'd like the board to support receiving this grant, and the county is eager to have an executed agreement sent to them tonight. They asked if at the end of the meeting we could send them the agreement. So basically that's what I'll say, and I'm not sure if Mr. Schultz has anything to add, but he is available.
And other than it was Mr. Cassiola that did all the hard work on a year and a half ago when I came in,
I noticed that we needed upgrades to it, so I kind of mentioned to her about the PEG money, and she ran with it and was able to find out where the money was at and to get it for us.
All right, well, where do we vote?
Yes.
Well, let's take public comment and then let's
begin it. He'll sound a lot better.
Can Rob go through just the basics of what we're receiving?
Ms. Cassiola can do that.
I can do that. No problem.
Great.
So we'll be adding overhead speakers. We currently only have these two, so there'll be some more in the back. Better mics. We'll have tablets here, so maybe not as much paper would be in front of us. I'll still print for those that do want paper. We'll also have, as Mr. Brown said, we'll have rotating similar to those, but they won't be on tripods. And then we'll also have the ability to remote conference. So like Zoom type meetings back like when we had in COVID, but people would be present and then others could be on the screen and hopefully we would hear better than we did with Mr. Schultz tonight. And then also, yes, the projector will be up here and the screen would be back here so it wouldn't be awkward with everyone. And you guys would have it in front of you on your tablets while the public has it here behind you.
And then no more of this stuff?
You'll still have the podium, but yeah, none of that. No more tripping hazards.
Yeah, okay.
Like this tripod here will be gone and all that. Yeah,
correct.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And we got the quote from Bill Gaines, who does a lot of work. I know they did Morro Bay's, which Rob gave me their information.
So
Rob did do a lot.
It's not a Zoom, it's a different program than Zoom, though, right?
It's Zoom-type meetings.
Zoom-type.
Yeah.
Okay.
And is there something for the hearing impaired?
We already have the white little soundboard right there. We have earphones, so I've had, I think, at least two customers use them before.
Okay.
So that's also another public service announcement. If anyone does want them, we already have that.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
just let me know before meeting.
Okay, so we'll take public comment. Okay, no comments. So Rob, thank you for being able to get this for us. I mean, we'll be modern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah.
For doing all that.
Thank you both.
Yeah.
We'll be normal.
No, don't go that far. All right. We'll bring it back to the board. So
I'll make a motion that we approve items 8B.
B.
I second.
Okay, a first and a second.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And President Gibson?
Yes. Okay, good news. Yeah, get that off to the county tonight. Okay, so we'll move to item C. And Mr. Brown?
Yes, President Gibson, members of the board. So item 8C originally had two recommendations. I think we're only going to talk about recommendation one tonight. So we're not going to have the ability to approve any emergency work to replace valves and build a temporary bypass because in order to do that, we need a 4/5 vote for the public contract code. And given the fact that we have two board members absent, we don't even have the potential to do that. So, which is okay because with Mr. Maricino back and really diving into this, he'll be working with our engineering team and myself to kind of really ferret out what exactly the best solution is here. So we'll be back to the board when we're ready to do that in the coming weeks or month. But if we focus on item one, really it's a change order not to exceed $72,622 to meet county pavement restoration standards and some of the other minor unforeseen construction work and use project contingency to fund the work. So we do have just enough contingency, I believe, to cover this work. One of the issues that we had in terms of the pavement restoration was some conflicting components of our standards where OCSD has a standard for trench repair and pavement restoration. The only issue is we don't really own and maintain the right-of-way. That's county roadway, and so really it's the county's restoration standards that take precedent. And when this item was put out to bid, I think the contractor paid more attention to the OCSD standard and not the county standard. And it just so happens that for Mendel, Truman, and Railroad, those had just recently been repaved. And so the county standard is if you cut a trench in there, you have to do curb-to-curb grind and overlay restoration, which was not budgeted for. We've pared that back quite a bit in working. The county's been actually cooperative on enabling us to realign our pipes so that they're within 4 feet of the face of the curb, in which case we only have to do 8 feet of restoration to the center line, not all the way to the other side of the road. However, this is an ongoing activity, and we're going to continue to work with utility staff, Cannon Engineering Group, to try to bring the cost down as low as possible. But in the event that we can't do that, we're asking the board to authorize the amount in item number one, and I'm happy to take any board questions on that.
They took out a sidewalk on North Swing.
They got to put it back. They got to put it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this will come back?
Item two in the recommendation will come back to the board.
Okay.
Correct.
So we move to approve item one.
Correct.
That we're going to bring number two back. Okay. So I'll make, well, we're going to do
public comment first.
Public comment.
We'll take public comment. Okay. Seeing.
I'll move
seen.
That we approve item one of the 8C.
Second. Okay, we have a first and a second. Roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
President Gibson?
Yes.
And Director Villa?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, now we're on item D.
Yes, President Gibson. Item 8D is consideration and approval of the special district alternate member for the Local Agency Formation Commission, candidate vote and submittal of the vote. LAFCO and the Executive Director, Rob Fitzroy, have asked that we bring this item to the board. And just kind of a recap, this may sound familiar because 5 or 6 meetings ago, we had voted to recommend a special district representative on LAFCO. That vote went through. It turns out that the person we voted for that won the vote was on the alternate list. And so that alternate person went up onto the full LAFCO board, and now we're asked to backfill a future alternate in order to sit on LAFCO in the event that someone can't attend a meeting and they want to call up an alternate. So Owen Davis from the San Miguel CSD, John Joyce of Napomo CSD, and Justin Smith of Cayuco CSD have thrown their name in the hat and are seeking a vote, which when this board nominates and it votes one of those three, we'll submit to LAFCO and let them know that one of the special districts, in this case Oceano, is making a recommendation for one of those three candidates. Okay. So that's that concludes my presentation.
Comments before we go to public comment?
No.
Okay, we'll take public comment on this. Okay, and seeing no one respond, we'll bring it back to the board and I'll entertain a motion.
Will we have to pick a person?
Oh yeah, sorry. Well, a motion to pick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or we nominate who we want, or I'd like to.
Well, I'm thinking
nominate the member from the Pomo.
John Joyce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Is
okay.
That your
so
motion?
John Joyce has been nominated.
Yes.
Okay. I'll second, and we'll take a roll call.
Director Austin.
Yes. Yes.
President Gibson?
Yes.
And Director Villa?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, and now we'll talk about the capital improvement project, item E.
Yeah, I might move that we push this to the next meeting if it's okay with the board. I think in order to have a true discussion on perhaps refilling President Gibson's seat on the OSIP committee, there's no pressing issue to do this at this meeting, and I think given the fact that a couple of our absent board members have expressed some interest, perhaps if it pleases the board, we might push this to November.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
That's fine.
To have the people here can speak for themselves at that point. Okay, so that'll be continued, and then item F.
Item 8F, a board member first and seconded a request to come back and take a look at the OPARC fiscal year 25-26 budget. And so staff has done that. Ms. Cassiola dug into the numbers to look at how much money is left in the fiscal year. And so before the board tonight is just kind of an overview of the expenditures, the track event, and money that has been previously awarded by the board in order to be expended to OPARC's needs for their ongoing activities, as well as admin fund money in order to keep the committee going, meet Brown Act requirements, prepare minutes, agendas, those type of things. So those are all outlined in the report. I'll just go over and say that in terms of remaining budget, there's $6,101 that remains in general funds for the admin allocation. And there's $3,573 that remains unallocated in the budget, which means there's a total of $9,638 in general funds for the OPARC budget. And just to kind of recap, I know the board knows this, but for any folks new and tuning in, OPARC was initiated with what I understand was a one-time allocation of general funds. Since that time, our general fund balance has shrunk dramatically. Given the fact that our primary sources are the three utilities we operate, the solid waste, water, and sewer, are all enterprise funds, there are not a lot of other remaining funds for the district to allocate to OPARC in future fiscal years. But I do think that the current budget enables OPARC to continue through the end of this fiscal year. And so I think that kind of concludes our recap of the current situation. And I think there's a spreadsheet in there that Ms. Cassiola put together that kind of highlights that stuff. But I'm happy to take any questions if the board has them on the current budget status of OPARC.
Any comments by the board? Questions?
No.
I'm inclined to just leave it as it is, but we'll see what public comment is. Okay, we'll open public comment for this.
How can you get public how can I get public comment when I don't know what you're doing?
I can repeat the recommendation. It's recommended that the board discuss and consider the OPARC fiscal year 25-26 budget and provide direction to staff as appropriate. So
so until I hear a discussion from the board, I don't really know what to public comment on, other than my request would be that you make no changes.
Well, that's one of the options. So one of the options the board has is no changes to the OPARC budget through the end of the fiscal year, or provide staff direction on changes to the OPARC funding budget.
Well, still, the timing of it, how can I respond to anything the board says if the public comment is taken first? When I was president, we had the discussion and then we took public comment so the audience would know what was going on.
Well, I think the director that wanted this on is not here tonight, so.
But the other thing, just to be clear, President Gibson and Mr. Schultz can chime in, the standard practice in all Brown Act meetings is there's a staff presentation, there's board questions. There didn't seem to be many board questions on this. Then you take public comment. Then there's deliberation and vote, if any.
Right. I think Shirley stated that leave it as is, and we just were quiet. We were in agreement.
Yeah.
Well, Linda said so.
But again, but to be clear, we're not technically supposed to opine on what we're going to do until we take public comment.
That's right.
So I think we've done our job. Yeah. We presented the report. There are options to do nothing. There are options to provide staff direction. And I think it is appropriate for the president to seek public comment, if there is any, on the OPARC budget for the current fiscal year.
Okay. So are there any public comments?
For the two options.
Sunny Paws, I'm on Oak Parks. So the park, I mean, the track was super awesome. It was an awesome addition to Oceana Elementary. But I feel like there's a lack of camps, engaging with the kids in Oceano, which that's why I wanted to be on the board. If we want to spend money, we probably could have did preschool equipment, shade, trees for Oceana Elementary. That's really needed. Again, the track is super awesome, that walking track. But there's also other things that were really needed on that school besides the track. And the budget, I would think if Charles Varney wants to continue doing stuff for the community, he could deal with O-Park and we could get rid of O-Park. No, he could deal with OCSD and get rid of O-Parks. Why waste the money and everything could go? And if you guys would decide with O-Parks or if you guys want to do anything else with the community, Charles Varney's welcome to come and share his interest on helping. But I don't think we need O-Parks. I think that's just a wasted fund. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for your comment.
So O-Park has accomplished quite a bit in terms of benefiting the community over the, year and a half that it's been in place. $16,000 grant to provide field trips for Oceano Elementary School students to state parks, and just finished up that spending that money. That wouldn't have happened without O-Park. Obviously, the track and field would not have happened without O-Park, since that qualifies us to apply for monies for things like that, as well as other infrastructure possibilities, such as improved transportation to points of recreation in the community. I believe that there'll be a time when the general funds in the OCSD are back to where they used to be in the $200,000 to $300,000 range, hopefully, and there will be funding available for O-Park in the interim. There are grants that can be written, and I'm willing to continue doing that work. I see no reason to, if O-Park is going to end because there's no longer any money left in the kitty, then so be it. But to pull the rug out from underneath it after all of the good work that it's done and saying like, well, we're gonna take away the $3,000 because there's something that's really critical that OCSD needs that $3,000 for, or the notion, presented that Oceana Elementary School needs trees. So I don't know if that was a proposal, but I know that they are getting trees from EcoSlow for free. So I would encourage you just to leave it as it is, let it run its course, and see if it survives without any additional resuscitation in the form of a budget from OCSD until that's something feasible. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Hello, board. My name is Wanda Monson. I'm the Oceana School Safe Routes to School Coordinator. I have to agree with Charles. A lot of what has been done could not have been done without being under the umbrella of OCSD. Certainly, the 20-plus field trips would not have happened for our students in grades 1 through 6. The track is amazing. I wish you could have been there to see it, Sunny, to be there and be a part of the ribbon cutting ceremony, because the enthusiasm of those students was really something to see. And not only that, but there's continuing discussions about starting an Oceano track and field. We're gonna be working with the Peregrine Running Club to sponsor and host events. So I just feel that, this is such a new endeavor for us, Oceano Parks and Recreation Committee. We have so many ideas, and we've just not, I felt that trying to move forward has just been stifling. We can't seem to get our feet on the ground, and we need a chance to be able to do things for this community. Our families cannot afford the prices of the fees that the other community parks and recs are offering. They don't have, some of them, the ability to drive their children there. We have a building that we can use to utilize classes, opportunities. We have a track. We have soccer fields. There is so much that we can offer the not only the residents, but the children and families of our community. And I think that not giving us the opportunity to do that would be a loss for this community. We should give us a chance. Let us try to see what we can do. And with community support, we can do a lot. We can do a lot. Thank you so much. Thank you.
President Gibson, I did hear from Mr. Schultz. I think in order to get him up and speaking, we need to have it run through AGP, and I do think he might have some insight for us on this item. So if we could get Mr. Schultz to up to the screen and hear from him. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I just was going to mention to you that if, in fact, there's no changes to the budget, then there's no future action you can be taking. But if you were going to change the budget and eliminate the money to the Record Park Committee, it would have to come back for a budget change.
Yeah, it'd have to come back if we made a change.
That's right.
Is that what he said?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So
I think we understand
just leave
that.
Leave it as it is.
Okay. Any more public comment? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment. And board comments?
I just think that we should just leave it as it is. It's done great work, and I am very hopeful and that it will continue to do, and let's see where it takes us.
Okay. So basically, it looks like the board's giving direction to just leave it as is.
Yeah, the recommendation then would be number one, no changes to OPARC budget through the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, do we need a vote?
It is as an action item. I think it'd be cleaner if we just took the vote to staff recommendation number one.
Sure. Roll call vote, please.
We'll need a motion and a second for number one.
Oh, I thought we did a motion.
You all said it, but no one officially.
I motion that we adopt option number one for OPARC.
There you go.
Okay, second. So we have a first and a second.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Gibson?
Yes.
And President, or excuse me, Director Austin?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Okay. Next, we have hearing items, which we don't have any, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then we have written communications.
Yeah, I'll just kind of go over the written communication and one late received communication in summary form. So, item 10A on page 174 is a memo from Mr. Schultz regarding the board's decision to a partial connection fee waiver for 1900 Front Street. And I know that the board, all the board members have read that, and I think it's been helpful to have that clarified. So thank you, Mr. Schultz, for putting that together. The second received communication was from Mr. Varney, where he talked about I think the title of it was about the Sanitary District's Coastal Commission CDP special conditions, where he wanted the board to be aware of those special conditions and the required reports that have to go to the Executive Director of the Coastal Commission. So the correspondence between myself and Mr. Varney is included, as is an excerpt from the CDP, the Coastal Development Permit. That's included. We also had a received communication from Quentin McCalla, who is interested in the board being expeditious in settling the ESA litigation with the plaintiffs. And we also received a late communication from Ms. Tacker, which has been provided via handout. And I think that covers everything.
take public comment on written?
Sure, if there is any.
Okay, anybody want to jump up and... No, okay. Okay, public comment is closed. What about future agenda items?
We'll, Ms. Castiola and I will work with staff to prepare the November agenda. At some point, whether it's before that or at that meeting, we'll bring back the valve replacement work and the desired approach for that area on Railroad at Air Park. And yeah, we'll see you second Wednesday in November.
Okay. All right. So it looks like we are going to adjourn. Thank you, everybody.
I can get it. Can you?
Yeah,
I just want to make sure.
So, Peter. So I talked to Rob before this came out with Julie. Is she still saying that I've done something?
Thank you.
What is she trying to say? No, it's not.